Good evening and welcome to our meeting of Mid Ulster District Council and the Chamber Dungannon, and whether if you have joined us remotely or in the Chamber. I'm not going to go through all the housekeeping because we should know that well enough by now, and we'll just move to the first item on the agenda. So apologies, so we'll go through the roll call. Councillor Ashton?
Present.
Councillor Bell?
Present.
Councillor Black? Councillor Brown?
Present, Chair.
Councillor Buchanan?
Present, Chair.
Councillor Clark?
Present, Chair.
Councillor Colvin?
Present, Chair.
Councillor Cuddy? Councillor Cuthbertson?
Here.
Councillor Doris?
I'm sure.
Councillor Ellider?
I'm sure.
Councillor Ford?
Present.
Councillor Gilderney? Okay. Councillor Glasgow?
Present.
Councillor Martin?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Kearney?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Kerr?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Mullaghan?
Here.
Councillor Niall McAleer?
Here.
Councillor Sharon McAleer? Councillor McFlynn?
Here.
Councillor Brian McGuigan?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Sean McGuigan?
Here, Chair.
Councillor McKenna?
Here, Chair.
Okay, Councillor McNamee?
And Chair.
Councillor Donald McPeak?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Sean McPeak?
And Chair.
Councillor Mullen?
And Chair.
Councillor Malloy?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Monteith?
Here.
Councillor Mullen?
Here.
Councillor O'Neill?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Quinn?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Robinson?
Here, Chair.
Councillor Tatton?
Here, Chair.
And Councillor Wilson?
Here.
Okay, thank you. And item three then, declarations of interest. So you can declare now or if there's anything relevant as we go through the meeting. Okay, and Chair's business then. Members, we'll have all have heard the awful news of the attempted murder of DCA John Caldwell last night in Oma in front of a son and other children and young people. I would like to extend my solidarity to John and his family and wish him a full recovery. Today we have seen all parties and all communities coming together to condemn this attack. People are outraged and rightly so. There must be no place for such attacks by the enemies of our peace. I would like to propose that we send a letter to John and his family condemning the attack and sending our solidarity and well wishes to them. And I would like to seek unanimous support for this letter so that we can offer the full support of Mid Ulster Council, similar to the letter sent by all parties this morning. Okay.
Second that.
Thank you, Councillor Bell. And I know some of the party leaders wanted to speak, so Mark, if I could call you first.
Thank you, Chair. If I could just say a few words on the attempted murder of DCA John Caldwell last evening. I played football against John whenever we were much younger. The last time I was talking to him was in a swimming pool with his family, and likewise I was with my own family. John was just an ordinary man, the same as anyone else living and working in County Tyrone. Some of us chose different careers, let it be farmers, builders, councillors, nurses, doctors, firefighters. But John chose to serve his community as a police officer. The fact he wears the police uniform gives no one the right to shoot him. Indeed, our jobs would all be a lot easier if DCA Caldwell was sitting at his desk this evening, helping to put drug dealers behind bars, rather than lying in hospital, fighting for his life. As a council, we should send our prayerful support to DCA Caldwell and his wider family and his colleagues at this time. As a council, we should condemn those who planned and shot DCA Caldwell. Police officers are hampered in doing their jobs daily because of the terrorist threat. And many times in this council chamber has it been talked about antisocial behaviour? How many times have we talked about rural crime? How many times has it been discussed about substance abuse and organised crime? Yet here we have a man who was taking the fight to the criminals and removing them from our streets when a few cowards skulk around in the dark and shoot him in the name of Ireland. I don't know how you put logic to that, but council, I couldn't put logic to it 30 years ago either. It was criminals then, it's criminal now. It was terrorism 30 years ago, it's terrorism today. There was no justification for shooting police officers in 1973, no justification in 1983, and no justification last night in 2023. Finally, last night DCI Caldwell was shot in front of his children, or his 12-year-old son, who saw it all. They will never get over this trauma. But unfortunately, this wasn't the first time a Republican shot a policeman in front of his child. But Council, let's make sure tonight it's the last time. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Glasgow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. last night's horrific attack on a serving police officer is a stark reminder of the past that we had hoped to see the end of, and the reminder of the past that innocent serving men and women had lost their lives because they were carrying out their job and duty to protect all people of all backgrounds from the terror campaigns that was inflicted on this country for over 30 years. We must remember in 1998, 71% of the people of Northern Ireland voted for the peace we have known for 25 years, and that still remains today and will continue even though these people insist in trying to bring us back to the dark days. Tonight we remember Detective Chief Inspector John Caldwell, who is fighting for his life. He is a husband, a father, and a man whose career is to protect the people of Northern Ireland and enforce the law of the land in which we live in. The people who carried out this attempted murder must be found, and they must be brought before the court, who will bring the full weight of the justice system upon them. There is no corner these people can hide in. They will be found, and they will be prosecuted. There is no place in any society, especially in Northern Ireland, where an innocent man who is carrying out his duty as a father to his son was gunned down in a community space. As the councillor had mentioned, his son was subject to the horrific sights of his father being gunned down, and it's once again the reminder of the past in which many people have now grown into the adulthood who remembered their family member was gunned down before them. Society must move on. These people must be condemned and brought to justice regardless of what they stand for. The law is the law and murder is wrong. Madam Chair, on behalf of my Ulster Unionist colleagues, I pass on our thoughts and prayers to the Caldwell family for the difficult days which will lie ahead, and we pray together as a group for a full recovery of the Chief Inspector, John Caldwell. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. My thoughts and the thoughts of my SDLP colleagues are with Detective John Caldwell, and with the paramedics, the doctors, the nurses and his police colleagues looking after him at this time. I think we were all shocked last night to hear about the attack. It's 2023. We signed the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, and yet we still have these relics of the past determined to try and drag us back to the bad old days. The people behind the attack represent nobody. They represent nobody in this chamber. They represent nobody in society, and all they're doing is causing death and mayhem for their own purposes. The fact that he was shot in front of his own son just adds to the horrificness of this attack. I remember when I was about 9 or 10 and listening to the news when we were talking about joining the police and all that sort of stuff. I remember asking my dad, I said, would we join the police? Would we do that? And my dad just simply turned around to me and he says, how the hell do you have a country without proper law and order? And that's the basic fact. It doesn't matter what you are or who you are, you can't have any type of country without proper law and order. And people should be free to go to hospital, go to the police service, do whatever they want, whatever job they want to do, without fear of being shot in the back while you're at a football match training children. As simple as that. I can't condemn this attack strongly enough. I know everybody in this chamber will do the exact same. And the message has to go out to anybody who thinks or is deluded enough to think they're doing some good or doing something for any cause. They're doing nothing but causing destruction, mayhem, and they need to stop, wise up, and actually join the rest of us in the 21st century and do something decent for society. So I'm happy to support the motion, Chair. Thank you.
I think that's everybody that's indicated. So I'll move on to the rest of the items and Chair's business, and thank you all. I would just like to start by welcoming the funding which has been successfully secured for Derry Nord and Drumcairn Forest upgrades through the latest round of shared prosperity funding announced just last week. As members will know, this comes hot off the heels of the recent announcement of successfully securing $9 million for the regeneration of Mahara. The award of just over £104,000 will make up part match funding elements of Derry Nord and Drumcairn projects, and this will allow us to unlock additional investment to further support the development of outdoor spaces under outdoor recreation strategy, currently in its third year across the district. Projects like these also have benefits in a wider sense, encouraging those from outside our district to visit. This month, a significant cross-border tourism project has been set in motion as part of the Slieve Bay Partnership. Outdoor Recreation NI have appointed as consultants for a feasibility study to look at developing walking, cycling and equestrian activity in the area. This is a significant project in an area that has great conservation and heritage value, and it's great to see an initiative like this, which can help to develop tourism and recreation across all three partnership councils involved. There are a few things that I would like to encourage you to take part in over the coming weeks, which should be very exciting. So we know that the proportion of older people in Mid Ulster is growing, and by developing our new age-friendly strategy and action plan, Council is making an important commitment to older people now and throughout future generations by outlining how we as a district can become more age-friendly. Consultation for the plan is now open, and I would encourage you all to have your say. It's important that we get this right from the get-go and by ensuring that our older residents' voices are heard clearly when we are in the planning stages. We'll plan to do the right things and deliver them in the right way for our residents' needs at the right time. And I'm also encouraging everyone in Mid Ulster to mark International Women's Day on Wednesday, the 8th of March, by supporting the theme of Embrace Equality. This year, we're holding two events which will celebrate the achievements of inspirational local women who are marking a major impact in the world of business, community and all areas of society. And all money raised through the events will go to Causeway and Mid Ulster Women's Aid, a very worthy cause, I'm sure you'll all agree, and which helps to save many lives. And I would also like to take this opportunity to invite you all to a session more, a big session in aid of my chair charity, Steps Mental Health, Causeway and Mid Ulster Women's Aid and Threat Support, happening on the 3rd of March in the Seamus Heaney home place. The night will see local traditional musicians and dancers from the Grugan and Smith Schools of Irish Dancing entertain as the story of my own neck of the woods, Ballinascreen harpist and harp maker Cormac O'Kelly. So the story of him and the famous downhill harp that he made in the 17th century and which now resides in the Guinness Storehouse Museum. The arts are in fact very much to the fore in the coming month as the council is showcasing the local art scene through the first ever Mid Ulster Arts Festival, which will put on record all the upcoming opportunities for residents to connect through creativity. So it's fantastic to have this festival as a platform to showcase and celebrate the work that is being produced right across our district. And I hope everyone can find something that they enjoy and in doing so show their support for the organisations that work so hard to bring our district to life through the arts. So that includes my remarks this evening. Thank you all for listening. And go ahead, Councillor Gildernew.
Just to record the presence, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And the next item of Chair's business then is Councillor Sean McGuigan.
Okay, thank you, Chair, for allowing me to bring this about St Mary's Primary School, Five Mile Town. I know I raised it a couple of months ago. We got unanimous support from the council on it and sent a letter off to the department. However, I suppose since then there has been quite a surge in lobbying and call for help from both school staff, the Board of Governors, from parents and people in general. And they have been encouraged by the support of their neighbours and the wee primary school, the controlled primary school, the various sectors within the Five Mile Town area, who realise the importance of keeping their school open as a community hub for both Five Mile Town and the surrounding area. So I suppose the main point on the main thrust of the point from the last time really is around that this school, it has demonstrated its sustainability against almost all the criteria, and that's around the academic standards, leadership, management, accessibility, strong links to the community, and it also demonstrated a sound financial position and can operate within its yearly budget. And it, obviously the main factor was around the numbers of pupils there at, but those numbers have been increasing significantly over the years and within projected figures. And indeed, given the projected housing demand for Five Mile Town and also some of the expected builds that will occur in that area, it would lead us all to believe that there is, it will be a need for this school in the short to medium term. So in essence, basically the people that I've been speaking to have been asking me, as a councillor, as a council even, can we redo our support for them and just make our case to the department again? And therefore I just propose that we do that with your indulgence, Chair. Thank you.
Letter. Thank you. And Councillor Sharon McAleer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It's just on the same issue, St Mary's Primary School, Five Mile Town. It is now in the formal statutory objection period, at the end of which the permanent secretary at the Department of Education will decide whether to close the school from effect from the 31st of August this year. Late last year, the council supported the school at the earlier pre-publication consultation stage, but regretfully, the proposal to close the school has progressed, regardless of the significant opposition expressed at that point. The Board of Governors are keen for the Council to prepare a response to this final stage of consultation, which is due to close on the 8th of April, and the school representatives are keen to have an opportunity to engage with the officers to discuss the key factors under consideration. Currently, there are 43 pupils at the school, and this will rise to 50 in September this year, and this is making an upward trend over the several years. The next nearest maintained school lies more than 6 miles away along mainly narrow country roads. So when bus travel is considered, few of the children could ever take advantage of extracurricular activities in their new school. Furthermore, any consideration of rural needs could only conclude that the children of St Mary's have been adversely affected by this closure proposal. And it's disappointing to note that the case for change shows no evidence of having due regard to the impact of the proposal on rural needs as required by the Rural Needs Act 2016. So I just would ask the council if they would further write the letter, you know, to support it. And it's just that there really is nowhere else for a hub within Five Mile Town. It's very important that they keep the school. And realistically, I know from other schools that have closed, the CCMS promised transport, or the EA, and they promised transport, but it never happens. And this falls to us as councillors to try and organise that transport to the next school. But they tell the parents, oh, we'll sort out transport and you move to school, and then they don't enrol their children into P1. So it's a vicious circle. But thank you.
Okay, so we have a proposer for the letter there, Sean, and then Sharon, yourself to second. Yeah. Okay, and Councillor Gildernew.
Right, sorry. Thanks, Chair. Could I add my voice to the last two speakers, please, in support of St Mary's Primary School, and hope that it works out satisfactorily for them. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And then moving into matters for decision. So item 5, council minutes of the meeting held the 26th of January. If I can get a proposer and seconder, Councillor Mullaghan and Councillor McAleer. Councillor Monteith.
It's relation to C006/23, when we raised last month about the cuts in the youth funding for Dungannon Youth Resource Centre and Ogris, And I was going to raise this anyway, but I see a letter Martina circulated today there from EA saying that they're willing to meet, and I think we need to go forward to that meeting as soon as possible. I know that the Voluntary Youth Youth Alliance, which represents voluntary youth groups, has put together a very comprehensive rundown on how these are actually cuts, despite the fact that EA are saying they're not cuts. While it's true to say that the amount of money from Ulster has stayed the same, what they fail to show is that the number of providers has increased. So therefore, instead of getting, if we're getting extra provision in rural areas should be as well as what's going on, not instead of what's going on in urban areas. And it goes without saying, anybody, I think a lot of us would have seen, or a lot of elected reps, would have got sent a copy of the letter by young Josh Boyle, who is a user of the Nguyen Youth Resource Centre, and who states very eloquently and very professionally for a young man about the very real need he has that for his contact, for his social interaction, for his personal development, and actually states the need for the youth provision a lot better than anybody in this chamber could be doing, because he sees the value that he's getting out of it. So, Chair, can I propose that we seek that meeting that's been offered as a matter of utmost urgency, folks, tomorrow morning if possible, but this needs to happen. We cannot allow youth service to be removed from Mid-Ulster. We cannot allow organisations that have become a victim of their own success, because they are providing for hundreds and hundreds of young people across both through summer schemes, but also in term time as well as that. And we also can't sit back and allow this to happen, because we'll be the first to get complaints from people when those services aren't there. You know, we've heard before here about the actual volume of young people who are attending both youth centres, both on a nightly basis and on an annual basis. So, Chair, I propose that we get this meeting ASAP, and we invite representative of the Nguyen Youth Resource Centre on Ogris to attend that meeting with us, and keep taking the fight forward along with them.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Malloy.
Apologies, Chair. You happy to second Councillor Matthews' proposal? I've seen the letter coming out this afternoon from Again, these centres provide an outlet for young people, and we'd be the first to say whenever these young people have nothing else to do, and they're roaming the streets, then that we turn to say what's going on with young people, and what have we to occupy them. In terms of these two centres are doing that job, so they are in the voluntary sector and engaging with young people on a nightly basis. Whenever they're funding is cut, where do these young people go? Who makes the decisions as to the 40 that they can provide for and the 40 they can't? Who gets the cut? Who gets the priority? So, yes, welcome the engagement, Chair. We have engaged, several other councillors have engaged with both centres, and we want to get that sorted as soon as possible to make sure that their funding is protected. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Kerr.
Yeah, Chair, I fully support the two previous councillors' comments. The great work Ogris carries out is stellar work. They provide great services to many young people, weekends, during the day, during the night. Summer schemes extremely popular, so the council must do everything in its power to fight its corner and try and resist any kind of cuts to funding or to the services that the two youth clubs carry out.
Okay, Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just join in with the other speakers. Chair, I know my party had a meeting with the EA during the week in relation to this matter. Wasn't great. Ogris are losing 30% of their funding. I know groups outside of Mid-Ulster that have lost 100% of the funding, and they've had to let people, will have to let people go. It's an absolute disgrace. They're trying to worm their way out of it, as Councillor Monteith said, by not stating the fact they're not cutting the funding, but they're dividing it out among more people. This is putting jobs at risk. It's putting development of our young people at risk as well. Councillor Kerr has already outlined the fantastic work that OCRIS do along with it, so happy to support that. Chair, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And we can't underestimate the importance of youth services and developing children from early on right through. So we'll move on to item 6 then, special council minutes of the meeting held the 6th of February. If I can get a proposer and a seconder, please. Councillor Mullaghan and Councillor McAleer. Okay, and item 7, planning committee minutes of the meeting held the 7th of February. Okay, Councillor Mullaghan and Councillor Bale. Nobody else. Okay, item 8, PNR committee minutes of the meeting held the 9th of February. If we can get a proposer and seconder. Councillor Gildenew. Councillor Malloy. Okay. Councillor Malloy, were you looking to come on there?
No, Chair, just happy to propose.
Okay.
Councillor Brown.
Okay, Councillor Brown, were you looking to come on? Are you okay?
That's the next item, Chair.
Okay, so item 9, Environment Committee minutes from the 14th of February, if I can get a proposer and a seconder.
I propose, Chair.
Okay, who was that proposed?
Councillor
Shepard. And Councillor Niall McAleer.
Councillor
Kerr
and Councillor
Byrne,
Chair.
Okay, Councillor Kerr. Thanks, Chair. Chair, the item's just a 031. Forest last 23 is just for you're in the working group. I just find myself being excluded from an important subject in the Killeen area. I've decided that the Environment Committee, that a working group should be established to discuss in more detail the proposed closures of Killeen Recycling Centre along with Fathers, which was voted through by a majority at the special meeting, a special rates meeting to discuss. I just find it ironic that the membership of the working group will be made up of the majority of the parties that supported the decision. I think it's absurd that this decision is happening behind closed doors where the public can't watch or no minutes be collected or where myself with a political mandate is excluded. Why is this only being looked at and not the other decisions as other councillors brought up that night? I'm also disappointed one of the biggest days was cut from the Killeen calendar. I feel it's important the community of Killeen gets their say on the decisions and would like to formally propose the council facilitates a public meeting, not just for Killeen, but the other areas where the recycling centres are closing. And there should be a consultation in Killeen on other areas so the public can be updated and allowed to have their say. And working groups is not the way forward. We need accountability, transparency, and the best way to do this is with the public and community of Killeen and other areas affected and get their say. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Byrne.
Thank you, Chair. It was more on the same issue, but it's more maybe a matter of clarity from the director or the chief executive in regards as to what actually is the remit of the working group, and is this working group set up with the aim of overturning the decision that was taken at the special council meeting the previous Monday night? So if the chief executive or the director could answer what actually is the remit of it.
Chair, the remit of the working group. The working group is an established part of Council's governance procedures. It has been used consistently throughout the course from 2015 right through until today on various issues through various committees. It's tried, it's tested, and as part of our governance structures that have been agreed. The working groups work as a result are set up by the respective committees. They are set up on the basis and structured on the basis of numbers that have been agreed and are standing orders. The governance of them, the makeup of them is derived by De Hunt, which is the established policy governance approach of this council. The actual raison d'etre of the working group is clearly determined by the committee who established the working group, and that is very clear in this instance. And it is to review and look, I understand, at the recycling centres across Mid-Ulster, not just in the three towns, but across Mid-Ulster, and that is the rightful will of the committee concerned.
Okay, sorry, Councillor Brown, Councillor Monteith. Is it the same issue?
Is that to myself, Chair?
Sorry?
Was that to myself or was that to Councillor Monteith?
No, is it the same issue, is it?
I was more just to come back to the Chief Executive. So if the working group meet and they decide, right, okay, we're going to implement the plan, so is this an implementation of the plan for the closing of the recycling centres, or is this an implementation of a plan to turn around and say we're saving the recycling centres?
The working group,
because the decision was taken in full council surely the previous month that the recycling centres were closed. How can we come back the next month, next week, and turn around a committee and then set up a working group to turn around and say it's saving them again?
Chair, I will refer my comments regarding the governance structure that manages the process and procedures of council. And a working group is established by the said committee, and the remit of the working group is established and agreed by the said committee. The outworkings of the working group are fed back for consideration and agreement and or otherwise by the said committee.
Okay.
Okay,
Councillor Monteith.
Chair, I'd just like to second Councillor Kerr and his proposal for public meetings to consult with the communities affected by these closures. We all complain on numerous occasions around this chamber about meaningless consultation. This needs to be real consultation. Communities need to have a say over the services in their community, and communities need to have an ownership of the services in their community. So we need to be listening to people. And we're always very quick around this chamber, myself included, to give out at various organisations for cuts and things like that, with no regard for rurality, no regard for local communities, no regard for access to transport. And here is an issue which is facing us loud and clear. And I feel the only way to be open and transparent and democratic is to give these communities that opportunity to voice their concerns or their support, whatever the people in the area may want, in relation to this issue. I don't feel that the working group will achieve anything other than kick this down the road past the election. That's all that this is about. And I feel we need to... This is an issue in these communities at the minute, and these communities deserve to be listened to, and we shouldn't be fobbing off by saying there's a working group going to look at it. I have long stated my objection to the use of the working group. While I accept that the corporate governance was agreed by this council, it excludes myself, Councillor Kerr, and indeed Councillor Mullen, from involvement in it, and it's anti-democratic. The way that this council implements the hunt is anti-democratic. Numerous other councils around the six counties allow smaller parties and independents to form technical groups. This council has consistently refused to allow that to happen. So on that basis, we are totally opposed to a working group being used to try and take this issue off the agenda until after the election. So the only way to do this is talk to the people who are affected, talk to the communities.
Okay, and I think the Chief Executive there had explained to Hunt on the standing order system of working groups there. Councillor Monaghan.
Thank you, Chair, and can I propose that we go ahead as planned in terms of how we deal with this issue using the working group as per the minutes of the Environment Committee? And can I also seek clarification from the Chief Executive or from the Head of Finance, whatever is more appropriate, that at the special council meeting, we struck a budget for this council for 12 months based on estimates that were provided. At this point, as far as I'm aware now, that no paper has been put forward in terms of any of the things that have been talked about so far, and that those papers and reports will still have to come forward at some time in the future to each of the committees that they are most relevant to. So all this talk over the last few weeks, I think, has been unnecessary and put a lot of oxygen into an issue that still hasn't been dealt with. And the most appropriate way for our council to deal with that is using its committees and its working groups to try and rationalise and try and develop the best outcomes for the citizens right across this area. And consultation already takes place in the way of electing local councillors to this council. That's how we do business. That's how democracy works. So can I seek clarification at this point so that we can put this issue to bed, that the fact of the matter is we agreed a budget for 12 months, that no decisions have been taken in terms of services, and that if we find ourselves in 12 months' time not having made the correct decisions in terms of those budgets, well, then we'd have to take a look at that again and see how we rectify that. But at this particular moment in time, is that the correct status of this council?
Okay. JJ, can I ask you to come on there?
Thank you, Chair. In response to Councillor Mallaghan, yes, at the special council meeting, the council struck a rate, they set a budget, the budget reflected a range of officer proposals, etc. They were clearly delineated. Those proposals will have a process to go through. That the outcome of that process I can't prejudge, because I mean the process will go through the working group, as the Chief Executive explained at that particular issue. The bottom line is we have a budget. The councillors, through their democratic mandate, can make decisions throughout the year to vary that budget. But the bottom line budget has been established, and that's the fundamental point about where we are at this point in time.
Councillor Mullen.
Chair, if I can just follow up then. Thank you for the clarification, JJ. So over any 12-month period, the finances of the organisation can go up and they can go down. Something fantastic could happen where we could have a great amount of income come in and we could make decisions on how we spend that. Or something devastating could happen over a 12-month period where that will certainly constrain what we can do, but there's no way to know that. So I think it's time to stop sensationalising these issues and do our work, go to our committee meetings. And anybody can attend any committee meeting. Just because you don't sit in that committee doesn't stop you from going along and speaking. That's your right and your democratic elected right as a councillor. So I think we continue the process that has been set out in those minutes, and I think people should get on with their work.
Okay, and thank you. I think that there has cleared things up, and we've seen the different rates processes panning out throughout the past number of years, so I don't want to rehash the whole meeting. We know the work is going to be done through the committee there, and as Cahill says, anybody can attend, speak at the committee and through the working group. So I don't know if speakers still want to come in, or if that's a proposer and seconder.
No, I just wanted to come in regards to the suggestion of a public meeting. For the six councillors across the parties in Clogher Valley, we have been invited by the Feidmailtown Chamber of Commerce to attend a meeting next week to discuss services provided by Middle Ulster District Council. And I personally feel that that is a good way for us to start to discuss if they have concerns, rather than a public meeting as such.
Councillor Niall McLear, you have seconded the minutes, isn't that right?
Yeah, and just to
and
formally
proposal.
Second Cahill's proposal.
Okay, Councillor Glasgow, thank you. We're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No surprise, I said the exact same thing would happen in the Environment Committee, and it's come back here tonight, but I know why I voted. And I voted against any increase. But the way I said at the Environment Committee, I think the first and foremost, when people talk about public meetings and stuff like that, and quite right, people are cross. People are furious. So they are, that they've seen rates go up and services get cut. But I think the reality needs to be hit home here, that the officers didn't hide anything. The process was open, so it was, and figures were given. I got figures, and I gave them to my group, so I can't speak on behalf of the other political parties. But I would hate to think that officers are getting the blame for not sharing information, which I picked up out of the conversation, shouldn't say picked up out of the conversation. The word blame wasn't used, but it could have been seen by the public that figures weren't being forthcoming. And I thought the process was very open. Personally, I thought it was rushed, and I made myself known that I thought we should have stalled and delayed and give ourselves more time, but it was the will to continue on, and that's it. And I fully respect democracy in which goes on, obviously, within this chamber. But I think it's like every working group, there's been more mentioned than just the recycling centres. There's the car park in Cookstown, and the grass cutting as well. And as my colleague had proposed, Councillor Wilson proposed on the night, that it should all be included within any working group to discuss the way forward. We only have to read the paper today. I picked up on it where the leader of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium had mentioned about the high business rates and had mentioned Mid-Ulster, within it, that it's going to put people, put businesses under pressure. I've had businesses come to me about the car parking charges in Cookstown. It will put them under pressure. It will put the workers under pressure. And where will the people go? These things all should be discussed within a working group to see a way forward. So it is. I, as it says, on record, voted against it. I don't want to see car parking charges in Cookstown. I don't want to see closures when things are going up. People demand services, and as the colleagues over here turn around and say, you know, they need, I guess Coal Island is an uproar. Mid Ulster is an uproar. So I think if we're going to discuss this, we should take all in under one working group umbrella to get a way forward, to bring the people with us on this, to see, is there not a logical way out?
Okay, thank you. And just in the grass cutting, like, that is a DFA responsibility, and I think we should be lobbying DFA to be taking responsibility for the work that they are supposed to be doing, instead of council having a cost because of them. They wouldn't do it if the shoe was on the other foot. And just on the car parking pilot, that's a pilot that's been ongoing or in the process for a long time now. So just wanted to state that, Councillor Ashton.
Thank you, Chair, and it has sort of been just touched on there by Councillor Glasgow. I think it is important to note, and I'm not intending we put enough effort into the rates meeting all year round without rehashing it all here again. But it was very clear the directors have to put in front of us how they're going to make their books balance. It was very clear from that particular directorate that they were intending to make a saving. I think it was approximately of over 400,000. And of that was the proposal that money was coming out of closing recycling centres. So people in the room, well, maybe they didn't understand the budgets or they didn't want to know that that's the reality until the backlash has come from the community. But I certainly, and it come very much from the DUP proposal on the night, we made it very clear that there was recycling closures on the budget, of which we didn't support. But I think it would be very unfair to sit here tonight and say that councillors were not aware that that was part of the budget process.
Okay, Councillor McNamee.
Thanks, Chair. Just in relation to the car parking charges in Cookstown, it's quite clear what the process is. We've already been through committee with this, that the pilot scheme is rolled out in Moorfield, and the outcome of that is brought back to committee to see what it is, see if it's going to be viable to take forward. So until that process takes place, we've no need for anything else. We just need to wait and see the outcome of that process. Chair, thank you.
Yep, thank you. And Councillor Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the closure of these leisure or these recycling centres were actually on the first item, or was on the very first paper that was produced to the group leaders. So everybody or every group leader knew that that was part of the process. The officers are tasked with going away and producing what is a budget based on a number of facts. If, for instance, now, and I pay tribute to the officers for that, but if now we are going to look at these, and if by some chance, well, a good chance I would say now, that some of them are not closed, does that mean that there's an increase in the rates because we were based that on 7.3, or are we going to cut it somewhere else? The 7.3 is far too high anyway, but are we? That's the question I'm putting to the Chief. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, I think at the rate setting, I made it very clear that once we set a financial envelope, as JJ has outlined, we have to operate within that. That envelope has been set for this year. If members make a determination in terms of the implementation of that, that changes, that means that some of those efficiencies can't be found, then we have to still try and operate within that envelope, as we've done last year when we put forward recommendations that weren't implemented. We still had to operate within the envelope or bring those efficiencies back to the rates process, which we've done this year, which in that case now would have to happen next year. So we operate within the envelope. We work with our members through the committee structures to try and implement what has been proposed and agreed or up for consideration. Members always have the political mandate to make the decisions, and as an officer team, we will implement and operate within accordingly.
Councillor Cuthbertson.
And like other councillors here before me have said, while I disagreed with the decision and the paper at the meeting, it was clear. I asked for clarification before the vote in relation to the grass cutting and recycling centres closing. It was clear. People voted on that. That was clarified also by the director of the Environment Committee, that the decision to close the recycling centres was made, and any particular working group would be to progress that matter. So I don't know what has changed tonight from people saying that, but while I welcome the fact that there is maybe an opportunity to look at the recycling centres, I would like to save the recycling centres. Our party proposed we would save them. Likewise, the grass cutting is not a black and white issue. It's okay for people to say here tonight that's DFA. The council have always maintained, yes, in the past they got a small grant from DFA. They've always maintained their approach and the centres of the villages. And to walk away from the villages now is leaving villages with absolutely nothing. That's the only sort of service the villages get. This council will go out and plant flowers in villages, which is pointless because you'll not see the flowers with the grass growing up. And Chair, your party has on two occasions, you've blocked it tonight. Your party blocked it at the Environment Committee as well in relation to but including the grass cutting in any going forward. And it's simply because your party is under pressure from people out there, rightly so, and you haven't been lobbied in the grass cutting yet. The decision will change in 2 months' time, and the grass comes back. Yourself or somebody in your party will be back here asking for it to be included again. It's plain to be seen that. So I'm going to make a proposal here again tonight that grass cutting is added into the mix of any working group. Again, I'd be on the proposal, bring it to the Environment Committee. I think there's too many different working groups. I know there's a formula there. There's a procedure for working groups. But I think it's just another meeting behind closed doors, which is not a decision-making body, which will have to come back to the committee. So I would happy that it would come back to the Environment Committee just on a paper. But I want to make the proposal that grass cutting is included in the mix of any further discussions.
Well, Councillor Cuthbertson, I think what you said there, Environment Committee is where that should be discussed. So it's brought up there.
And that is a working group. It should be brought to the Environment Committee. That's what
well,
I said.
The minutes of the working group, or the minutes from the meeting.
The working group's not a decision making body.
Body includes.
Chair, there's two proposals on the floor, as it stands, that have been seconded. One of which is to recommend the minutes and the recommendation of the minute of the committee, which is clear, which addresses the issue of the grass cutting. Therefore, I suggest, Chair, that we go and address the first proposal, which is proposed by Councillor Kerr and seconded by Councillor Monteith.
Just in point of order, the Chief Executive quite rightly pointed out the corporate governance structure of the Council and has been referred to by a number of councillors here, but just on a point of order, reference is also made to an entity called the Party Leaders' Meeting, which is not a part of the corporate governance in any document that I have ever seen, and again, which myself, Councillor Kerr and Councillor Mullen are excluded from. So we're very concerned that documentation in relation to rate setting was going to an entity within the council which has no statutory function and no part within the corporate governance organisation.
Okay, so I'm going to move to the vote. I'm going to move to the vote here because we're.
The
meeting's
maybe
already been had and we're just rehashing everything that's already been
Chair,
said.
But Chair, I had indicated.
Yeah, that's not fair.
No, I'm moving on because everything has been said at this stage. So if we can move
Chair,
to the vote on the public consultation.
Councillors have been several times and Councillor Calvin hasn't been talked at all, Chair. I think it's only but right to let him have a chance.
No, I'm moving on, sorry. So can we move to vote on the public consultation. Okay, so if you want to indicate if you are for or against, so.
Councillor Kerr.
Sorry, 1 second, Councillor Kerr.
Yep.
No problem, yep.
Chair, just repeat the proposal, please, then, since it's an amalgamation of two proposals.
I'd just like to propose that there be a public consultation facilitated by the Council in Killyle on the other areas affected with the recycling centre closures, and also to include that the grass cutting should also be included in the working group that was established by on a public consultation regarding the grass cutting. Chair.
Chair, point of order.
Okay.
Chair, point of order, no decision has yet been taken on these issues, so therefore having a public consultation on something that hasn't been decided by this council would be a waste of time. This doesn't make sense. Why are we taking a vote on having a public consultation on something that hasn't been decided?
Chair, point of order, what's the point in taking a consultation on a decision you've already made?
Madam Chair, point of order, can Councillor Colvin express his view, as everybody else has?
Okay. No, I'm going to move on to the vote. This has gone on long enough at this stage. So, public consultation then
to include
grass cutting. So, can proposed by Councillor Kerr and seconded by Councillor Monteith. So, if I can have a let me know if you're for or against. So, Councillor Ashton?
For.
Councillor Bale. Councillor Black.
For.
Councillor Brown.
For.
Councillor Buchanan.
For.
Councillor Brinton. Councillor Clark.
Yes.
Councillor Colvin.
For.
Himself against. Councillor Cuddy.
For, Chair.
Councillor Cuthbertson?
For.
Councillor Doris?
Against.
Councillor Ellider?
Against.
Councillor Ford?
For.
Councillor Gildenew?
Yes, Chair.
Councillor Glasgow?
For.
Councillor Martin?
For, Chair.
Councillor Kearney?
For, Chair.
Councillor Kerr?
For, Chair.
Councillor Mullaghan.
Against.
Councillor Niall McAleer.
Against.
Councillor Sharon McAleer.
For.
Councillor McFlynn.
For.
Councillor Brian McGuigan.
Against.
Councillor Sean McGuigan.
Against.
Councillor McKinney.
For.
Councillor McLean. Councillor McNamee.
Against.
Councillor Donald McPeak?
Against.
Councillor Sean McPeak?
Against.
Councillor Mullen?
Against.
Councillor Malloy?
Yes.
Councillor McTeith?
For.
Councillor Mullen?
For.
Councillor O'Neill?
Yes.
Councillor Quinn?
For.
Councillor Robinson?
For.
Councillor Tatton?
Against.
Councillor Wilson.
Proposal is carried 2017, sir. Chair, obviously in determination of that decision and how that works in the connection with a working group, we'll have to determine how that consultation is carried out in conjunction with the committee and in conjunction with that working group, as members will understand.
Okay, and just on that, it still has to be worked through the committee there as well, so it's unclear what the consultation will be on there. Okay, so the next item then is item 10, Development Committee minutes. So if we can get a proposer and seconder.
Chair, an issue?
Okay, Councillor Clark and Councillor John McNamee. Okay, Councillor Cuthbertson.
Chair, just on DO29, and I want to welcome the fact that the pitch strategy has been brought forward. And while I welcome the fact that there's a proposal in it to formalise some sort of agreement of Dungan Hockey Club and the likes of Cookstown Hockey Club, it does still comes with disappointment that there be no council-owned facility in South Tyrone for hockey, which is very disappointing. But as I say, it is welcome that there is proposals there to formalise an agreement. And I just want to maybe put on record too, just Chair, that I think that where possible, anywhere that where there's issues of bringing facilities up to standard, if that could be brought forward. Even I just noticed there was some there in year five, whatever. I feel it's important that we bring our own facilities that we have up to standard before we would move into, say, a greenfield site to build someone else or make a new pitch, whatever. So I think it's important where possible, where the budgets allow, to bring forward any issue on the strategy that needs brought up to health and safety and brought up to standard. Thank you.
Councillor Kerr.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just a point of clarity, D030/23, it says in the report, Councillor McNamee second my proposal, Chair. I'd just like to know if that was just a report or was it the issue you had raised about the European Social Fund on the National Association of Drainage Contractors. If it wasn't proposed that night, I'd like to formally propose it tonight that it does be carried.
What was that reference, sorry, or what page is that on?
I don't know the page, Chair. I just used the appendix references. D030/23.
Page 115. And if I can just clarify the
query again, sorry. Chair, it says Councillor McNamee second a proposal. I'm just wanting to know if it's the report or if it was the comments I made about the European Social Fund on the National Association of Drainage Contractors. If it wasn't proposed that night, I would just like to formally propose now that that does go ahead, that the council reaches out to the trade unions on the local colleges and also contacts the National Association of Drainage Contractors. Thanks, Chair.
I think it's pretty clear there that Councillor McNamee seconded the recommendation.
It doesn't say in the actual report that them actions are to be carried out, if you know what I mean.
If the members of the committee are satisfied that that was the nature of the discussion and was agreed, we're happy to amend that.
Okay. Item 11 then. Sorry.
No, you're okay. I just wanted to declare an interest. Just in the early years, the Clougher project on the workhouse that I'm part of that community group.
Okay, thank you. And item 11, conference report.
So. Thank you, Chair. It's just to provide an update on seminars and conferences received to seek approval. The report is as is presented and attached at Appendix A, so it's just on for approval, Chair.
Okay, if I can get a proposer and seconder then. Okay, Councillor Monaghan. I'll second. Okay, and item 12 then, civic recognition report.
Thank you, Chair. It's to consider approval of requests for civic recognition from members in line with the Council's current civic honour and receptions policy. Chair, and again, it is as is presented and attached in Appendix A, just the list there that's been agreed.
Probably the proposed, Chair.
Proposer and a seconder. Okay, Councillor Niall McAleer. Okay, and matters for information then, item 13, consultations. Councillor Malloy.
Chair, it's just a consultation from the Southern Health and Social Care Trust in regards to
consultant on emergency general surgery provision. I assume this is in relation to moving some of the services from Daisy Hill to Craigavon Area Hospital, which does give the say 24 hours, 7 days a week for elective surgery, for emergency surgery. I do have concerns, Chair, around the capacity of Craigavon Area Hospital in its current state and the future proofing of that. No doubt anybody in South Tyrone will know of the extreme waiting lists, both in A&E and in Army services that are provided to Craigavon Area Hospital. And I think the Trust does need to look again at where they're providing services and how they manage some of the waiting lists. So I have concerns around the move to Solely Craigavon. I think we should be looking at this forming a response to the consultation. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Doris.
Yes, Chair. I was just hoping to take it back to the relevant committee, but the response on the domestic and sexual abuse strategy, there's some specific issues in Mid Ulster, particularly in terms of housing. So if we take it back to the relevant committee to prepare a response on it, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Sean McGuigan.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to speak sort of something similar to what Dominic had covered, and I suppose maybe a different angle than that. Normally we'd welcome this type of proposal, but I suppose that there's concerns around the fact that by the states that Daisy Hill Emergency Department will remain as is, there is a lot of sort of concern that how they're going to populate the new proposal in Craigavon, and that could be either through obviously staff redeployments or. And also, obviously, maybe use some more senior staff could be moved in one direction, which, in essence, could put Daisy Hill as a proposal on their track. So, again, I'm not stating the case for Daisy Hill, but obviously, I think it's one that we need to be careful in any kind of proposal we make on this one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And item 14, correspondence report. Councillor Monteith.
Sure, two issues. The letter back from the water in relation to Castle Hill. I see it says in the notice there, date being progressed, we can expedite that as soon as possible. But it's just worth pointing out that there seems to be a deliberate misunderstanding of the representation being made. Nowhere was anybody suggesting that that reservoir would be moved, with a point that we have consistently raised in this council and in the Nguyen South Tyrone Borough Council previous to this, was that that area should be open to the public to allow the 360-degree vista. So again, it's very disappointing that there seems to be an almost deliberate attempt here to subjugate and deliberately misunderstand what we're talking about, and it actually brings more home than anything the need for a face-to-face meeting and regular correspondent or regular face-to-face meetings on this. And I just also to point out, this was first proposed, I think it was November or December. It's ridiculous that we're only getting towards a meeting now. And on the other one then, there's correspondence from Derry City and Strabon in relation to the railway connections. So could I propose that we support that proposal in conjunction with Derry City and Strabon?
Okay, thank you. Can I get a second there? Thank you. Councillor Kearney.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, item 3.2, thank you first of all for writing the letter to the BBC. As you can see, we've got a very prompt response. I'm glad to report that job security seems to be progressing for the Derry staff, but I still believe the fight to retain the morning show as currently programmed continues. And thank you for the letter and thanks for the response.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Malloy.
Yeah, Chair, happy to send two from Councillor Monteith there. In relation to the water and the tower, communications tower, after our annual meeting with the water service, they didn't seem to know much about it. Really, and it wasn't an issue, despite ongoing issues for many years in our campaign to have it reduced or removed. So I'm happy to second that we're going ahead with the meeting, albeit a bit later than we expected, but it continues the communication. And hopefully we get a resolution sometime soon. In terms of the Derry Strabon and the railway proposal, I note that they have proposals around part of the trackbed within their area. And I think it's something we should also be looking at in longer term as to what some of the work, what track bed remains intact and what, where it, who owns it, where it lies, and protecting that track bed. And that we need to consult with our planning team as well around that. Yeah, that track bed is protected off what's still intact. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Cuthbertson.
Chair, thanks. Just in relation from DFA, in relation to grit and gritting and salt boxes and gritting the roads, and welcome the letter back from DFA. But someone that is never clear every year, and it may be worthwhile going back to DFA just to get clarification on, is the general public allowed to go and collect grit themselves? Or when I mean grit, it means the salt mix rather than the grit that's left at the sides of the roads. Now, I had a fellow on to me just this week that from a small rural road had went in, but he was refused it and told that he was only allowed to access to the grit, not the salt mix. So I think it would be worthwhile maybe going back just to get that clarified once and for all, because there's a different version every time, and there is farmers and country people out there that are willing to go in, get a bit and do their bit in their own area and do the corners, so especially for carers coming in. So I think it would be worthwhile just to clarify that.
Oh, Chair, I was just going to second Councillor Matisse's suggestion from the correspondence from Darius Trebanner regarding the railway. I think we need to do everything as a local authority to support. I remember the campaign group was in before, and we need to do everything possible to convince the powers that be that it's a worthwhile project. We should be able to get from the county right down to County Cork. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I was just going to make a comment in relation to Northern Ireland Water and the telecommunication mast reservoir at Castle Hill. I understand that we do have a meeting confirmed that has been requested by members. I'm just reluctant to name the date because I can't exactly recall it, but it's over the next couple of weeks. But we'll engage with the members and inform everybody tomorrow.
Very good, thank you. Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it's just to come in on two issues. One, both have already been mentioned, just on the rail motion from Darren Strabahan. Strongly supported. It's definitely something we should be looking into. I know it's been debated two or three times in this council already. It's an interesting idea of Councillor Malloy's to look at the track bed, because I know one does run through Cull Island. And I know there's been different issues, and we've held a few meetings over the years around it and the use of it. I've no delusion. I don't think I'll see a railway coming through Cull Island anytime soon, but certainly Dungannon and Armagh are two very valuable options. So a sort of a plan and a look into that there would be welcome. And then the other one, as mentioned already, is around the grit. People are welcome the letter. I don't really welcome it that much, to be perfectly honest, because I still think that their plan is outdated. If I use the example of the Annaghmore Road in my own constituency, Chair, at one end you have Annaghmore Primary School and it's gridded, no problem. But then at the end of that road is Kings Island Primary School, and the rest of the road is not gridded past Annaghmore. And their excuse from DFI is Kings Island's not in that road because on their opposite side, which I think is absolutely ridiculous. And the amount of cars that have went off on that road and the amount of buses that have actually went off over the last couple of years is frightening. And I think it's an outdated policy. It needs looked at. It needs reworked, especially for schools and even around the likes of Arbo and Muirtown, with a lot of local businesses that are still struggling to get people into work because the roads around there aren't gridded. That needs looked at. The whole thing's outdated, Chair. I think it needs all go back. DFA need a complete rethink on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Glasgow.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me in. I know it's along the same lines as Councillor Cuthbertson, and it's a very good point. You know, it's always important because, you know, it's like everything else. First, the people do a great job whenever they go out and put these grit piles out in the road, but whenever they actually run out and you have to get them replenished, the question is, where do you go? And how, you know, and actually can you get it? Because nothing's worse than people could be travelling from 10 miles plus from the most, you know, the most remote parts. And for instance, my own area of Ballinasillis and Beltinane coming down, having to come down the mountain to get the grit to be able to be told, you know, you can't get it. And in particular in those rural areas that, you know, dairy farms, beef farms, anybody, you know, trying to get anything up a road, that bit of grit actually comes in quite helpful. I'm sad to hear that Councillor Quinn says that the businesses in Arbo and Moortown are struggling because of it, but also everywhere else struggles whenever they can't get grit. So I would support that there going back to make sure. And as the Councillor says, the policy is outdated. The policy is outdated, and the roads repairs as well. The whole thing's outdated. So it does. But any push that we can do as a council to try and encourage, and it's not the local staff. In fairness, the local staff do their utmost best to deal with what is being given now by the Permanent Secretary and the Secretary of State. So I would support the letter going back.
Okay, thank you. I agree with everything there. Okay, so I think that was all in the correspondence. Notice of motions then. Councillor Wilson to move.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it's apt that this motion is coming before us tonight in view of what happened last night. But as we approach European Victims Day, it's important that we as a Council show our support to victims, especially at this time to the people of Ukraine. We've all witnessed the harrowing scenes from Ukraine where innocent victims have been brutally killed or maimed by the invading Russian army. We have all seen the effect that this had on the people of Ukraine, especially the women and children. Here in Northern Ireland, we have also witnessed acts of atrocity where innocent men, women and children were targeted by the IRA and loyalist groups. The provisional IRA run amok across this district for 3 decades or more, slaughtering men, women and children, including 8 innocent civilian men at Tiban who were travelling home from their place of work. Terrorists lay in wait to carry out premeditated murder. What threat did these men pose to anyone? And then we had the regular targeting of members of the security forces, primarily when they were off duty. I think of one in particular, Jimmy Spears at Desert Martin, where he was killed off duty and working in his own garage. 3 children were left behind, 10, 14 and 16 years. We think, and I think tonight, of the words of Deirdre, Jimmy's eldest daughter, who was 16 at the time. He was in office in the garage talking across the desk to the secretary. She phoned across. I think she tried phoning the police when the gunman was still there. She phoned across to my mother and we all ran out and we saw him taking his last breath. It is not something that ever leaves you. It is something you never forget, the sight of his dead body lying there covered in blood. In Makara, they placed a bomb underneath the car of William Gordon, who was transporting his children to school. The bomb murdered William and his 10-year-old daughter, Leslie, and seriously injured his son, who mercifully survived. In Ballygolly, the provisional IRA attempted to murder a former Dungannon councillor in Sammy Brush, and they have continued their campaign of intimidation upon him and his family for the years that have followed. They also murdered the headmaster of Auchnacloy High School, Cormac McCabe, on the 20th of January 1974, almost 50 years ago. The trail of destruction is there for all to see, and no corner of this district survived their fascist action. Last night we have seen once again gunmen back on our streets as they shot a serving police officer in front of his son and other children. And I'm sure, as we have already done, we wish DCI John Cardwell and his family, wish him a full and speedy recovery from what we know are very serious injuries. I'm also conscious that in this chamber, Councillor Mullen, whose father Dennis was murdered by loyalists, her experiences were not the experiences of any child in this country should ever have to go through. Councillor Black on my side here also lost his father, and I had known him personally, one of the nicest people you could meet, who was murdered on his way to work as a prison officer. I have absolutely no doubt that Kyle and Denise are still affected to this day by the callous murder of their much-loved fathers. All victims are entitled to justice, and I feel that it is important that they do. However, the government's ill-conceived legacy and reconciliation bill will not afford them this opportunity. This bill has been opposed by all political parties and victims groups at every stage, but it appears to have fallen on deaf ears. Madam Chair, I move this motion. Thank you.
Okay, and have we a seconder?
I second it.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And Councillor Cuthbertson?
Chair, thank you. Chair, and I suppose while we have Remembrance Day on the 11th of November, which remembers the great wars in Europe and further afield. I think it's a good idea that there is another date set aside, European Victims' Day. And Chair, the ruthless campaign of terror waged on our streets and on country lanes, in particular here in our border county, has left a legacy of pain and suffering across Northern Ireland. It is not just appropriate, but it is essential that we set aside to remember those whose lives were unjustifiably and callously cut short. The personal stories of those left behind could break even a heart of stone. To hear of the deep void of the loss of mothers, fathers, grandfathers, sisters and brothers to acts of terrorism is a timely reminder of why all proposals that make an equivalence between perpetrators and victims must be roundly rejected. Let's be clear, Chair. There's a clear difference between an innocent victim and those would-be victim makers, those terrorists who set out armed to the teeth in the dark of night or hiding behind hedges were not innocent victims. There are those who have called to draw a line onto the past. However, for loved ones impacted by terrorism, there is no option to hit reset. These experiences have shaped their lives and the lives of their children. They have to deal with the impact of this trauma every day. Innocent victims should not be left on the fringes or simply forgotten out of convenience. Instead, they must be central to Northern Ireland's future. Through their powerful testimony, victims have an important role to play in warning and educating the next generation. Although vital support is now in the process of being provided through the Troubles Permanent Disablement Payment Scheme, which excludes terrorists, there is much more to be done. We need to prioritise the health and well-being needs of victims and their families across our province. The DUP is also clear that they must also retain routes to pursue and obtain justice. That's why the government's plan for a de facto amnesty must be rebuffed. If we are to move forward in Northern Ireland, those innocent victims who suffered the most through no fault of their own must be remembered and respected. This council should do its part and recognise the many innocent victims of terrorism in our district by lighting up our buildings. Thank you.
Sorry, Councillor Mullaghan.
Thanks, Chair. Just very briefly, that the previous two speakers left out the victims of British state terrorism as well, so it's just to put that on the minute as well. Thank you.
Okay, and Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. As I keep pointing out, I'm younger than a lot of people in this room. I didn't deal with the horror of the Troubles for the most part, but since being elected, I've had the chance to speak to a lot of victims on both sides. One day I got a call from Alex Atwood. He told me, Malik, you go to a debate. I can't make it. No bother to you. It's about victims. Go on ahead. So I walked into the room and asked the person, I said, who's on the panel with me? And Geoffrey Donaldson, Tom Elliott and Jim Allister and me. And I thought, my, I can see why Alex didn't come down from Belfast for this. All right. And I met a lot of victims of Republican terrorism and a lot of victims and a lot of very angry stories that they used. And it was an eye-opener because it's obviously, it wasn't a community that I was too used to talking to. And then not too long after that, I think, thanks to the recommendation of Councillor Mullen, I met Anne Kilwalder, who put me on a reading panel on the Glenallan Gang. And a lot of the information was then used in her book, Lethal Allies. And that was really an eye-opener as well. And it just the motion tonight, I have no problem with. I think it's just then the tone taken afterwards, and I understand it has to be done too, but I say everybody in this country suffered in one way or another. Everybody in this room suffered. Some have suffered more than others. And we need to remember this isn't for victims are not there for political point scoring. They're there to be listened to, and they're there to be helped. And I have no problem with the building being lit up for Victims' Day. I have no problem in standing against the Legacy and Reconciliation Bill that the Tories are pushing through. And I've certainly asked some parties in this room to use their influence that they seem to have over the last couple of weeks on policy to insert more effort into getting that shut down, because it's a horrific bill, to be quite honest. But we also have to remember we have to move on as a society, but we have to look after our victims and speak to them. And it's not about a hierarchy, it's not about who's who.
everybody who's a victim is a victim and they need help. And I think we need to understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Councillor Monteith.
Chair, I'm looking at the agenda tonight. On the reading of the motion, I was pretty okay with supporting the motion. And I think I probably still will. However, you know, this has just been a debate about whataboutery and about a one-sided narrative of the situation in our country. Councillor Monaghan quite rightly points out the no reference is made to those who suffered at the hands of the British state. And while I have no desire to tell anyone how to remember their loved one, every grief or everyone's grief must be respected, regardless of the identity or the actions or the perception of the wider community on the person that they lost. But reference is made to people wearing masks and hiding in hedges. I can think of four young men whose families, brothers of people that I knew very well, who were shot dead by people wearing masks and hiding in hedges in Tlano Chapel, volunteer, IRA volunteers Sean O'Ford, Peter Clancy, Sean, Kevin Barry O'Donnell and Patrick Vincent. So one person's, it's been said many times before, one person's terrorist is another one's freedom fighter, and everyone's grief is equal. I can think of John Pat Cunningham, shot in the back by British soldiers. Just this week, on Tuesday, was the 35th anniversary of Aidan McInnespy, also shot, and the British system allowed his killer to walk free last week. Further proof, if any, is needed that there's no such thing as justice for an Irish person in a British court. I had hoped that this wouldn't be the tone of the debate, but we can't sit here and allow a one-sided narrative to be perpetrated. So I'll be happy enough to allow the motion to go through, because the motion, the wording of the motion, I think, is fair enough and allows everyone to interpret it that it includes them or their loved ones.
Okay, Councillor Sean McPeak.
Thanks, Chair. Listen, I'm not going to add or prolong the debate because one could go on this subject infinitum. But following on from Councillor Monteith and Councillor Mallon's contribution there about sectors left out within the previous speakers, it's very apparent to me we've lost two certain councillors within the Mid Ulster District, late Councillor Bernard O'Hagan and John Davey, personal friends of mine that were murdered, I have no doubt, through collusion. And you know, I think it awful remiss of us tonight not to mention those certain councillors at that time who were brutally and callously murdered.
Okay, thank you, Sean. And I think everybody's in agreement on the motion. Yep. Okay. Oh, any final comments?
No, that's fine. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, and the next motion then, so that's myself. So it's as presented there. So as a young person, the importance of education was always instilled in me. My parents didn't have the opportunity to go into the careers they had wanted to, as their families couldn't afford it. Being from poor rural backgrounds in the 50s and early 60s, my mother had wanted to be a hairdresser and my father had been encouraged to go on to teaching, but their families didn't have the money to send them for training. So they went straight into work and the jobs that they could get at the time to help their families and to support themselves. My father was always hungry for knowledge and was an avid reader and always encouraged us to learn. As they say, knowledge is power. I took that to heart and recognised the importance of education and that I had opportunities that they didn't. And although we didn't have money at home, times had changed and I was lucky to be able to go to university, which was something they could only have dreamt of. Once again, financial barriers are becoming an impediment to people wishing to go on their chosen path, heavily impacting on those from disadvantaged communities. Others facing barriers include women, often due to caring responsibilities, those with disabilities and those from ethnic minority backgrounds. As Chair of Council, I have met the Open University on a number of occasions now, and when they told me of their work on lifelong learning, I was very excited. I believe that everyone should have the opportunity to learn and to go on their chosen path, whatever that may be, without barriers. The Open University are part of the Lifelong Learning Alliance, which includes the Forum for Adult Learning, the Open College Network, ANTIS, and Chief Officers Third Sector CO2. They also work with the trade unions and throughout the various sectors. They believe their vision must recognise the intrinsic and holistic value of learning for all to transform lives, economies and communities. It's a fundamental relationship not just to widen participation in learning, but to support an inclusive and resilient workforce, better jobs and pay. The Open University's manifesto, The Future is Flexible, recognises the value of accessible, part-time, flexible higher education, and prioritising its growth is key to addressing skill shortages, economic productivity, regional imbalances and social inclusion. Creating a culture of lifelong learning is crucial to ensure that individuals participate in learning after leaving compulsory education. 34% of adults in the North haven't taken part in learning since leaving school, the lowest on these islands. People who have left school for whatever the reason, be it for caring reasons, financial, or maybe just not having the confidence or belief in themselves, should have the opportunity to then go on to further learning if that is something they wish to do. And it should be encouraged. Education should be flexible with hours that are suitable for those currently working or with caring responsibilities. And I know that the Open University already offers a credit system where learners can build towards their chosen level of education. They also provide apprenticeship programmes and work with those trying to address skill shortages such as in the health sector. The Alliance want education to be affordable, so needs to see funding and flexibility in payments for learners. The Open University also provides hundreds of free courses. They aim to support those in universal credit who wish to engage in education and ensure benefits are not penalised. To eradicate digital poverty and exclusion and remove barriers of age, barriers to women, those with care and responsibilities, those with a disability, disadvantaged communities and refugees, asylum seekers and the BAME communities. To conclude, and as already stated, lifelong learning results in a wide range of benefits and recognising the value of learning for all to transform lives, economies and communities. So, and will make our workforce more inclusive, resilient, resulting in better jobs and better pay. And I hope that you can support this motion. Okay, Councillor Mullaghan.
Thank you, Chair. And I had the opportunity to attend one of those meetings with you, and I found the session very interesting. And one of the things, I suppose, if we look back over my life, I would have loved to have had the opportunity to attend university, but decided to go travelling and go to work instead. But this Open University gives people such a fantastic opportunity now in terms of building up their credits at a time that suits them, particularly now with how busy life can be. But getting that second chance at an older age is such a fantastic opportunity. And it forms part of the mix that's now available to people in terms of going back into apprenticeships and going back into Open University for degrees or diplomas. And I just think we should play a really positive role as a local council in showing people, giving people the opportunity to see where these pathways are, and that it's not insurmountable to be able to begin one of these courses. And the way it can be divided up into bite-sized chunks and how those credits can then be applied to you over a period of time just seems to be a really fantastic way of doing it. So I was glad of the opportunity to find out more about it, and therefore second the motion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Black.
Thank you, Chair. As a party, we're generally supportive of your motion, and we agree that education should be accessible to all who seek it, for both the benefit of the individual and for wider society. Indeed, the 10X skills strategy developed by DUP economy ministers includes a commitment to creating a culture of lifelong learning, recognising that individuals of all ages will need to engage in education and training to ensure their skills and qualifications keep pace with changes in technology and with other areas. It also sets out a plan to deliver growth in qualifications relating to technical and professional skills. There is a particular need to address issues in Northern Ireland, and slight variance with your figures here, but as participation in adult learning is low, 18.2% here, compared to the UK average of 25.3% in respect of the working age population, and this needs to change. It is also important to note, as well as the minority groups that you have highlighted, Chair, that research shows that women, lone parents with dependents and carers are more likely to be in part-time employment. Therefore, it is also vital to ensure that these people can participate in lifelong learning. However, this will require the current systemic constraints in relation to childcare and social care to be addressed. This will be a pivotal part of transforming access to lifelong learning for those that are hardest to reach within our society. We also need to tackle inequality by supporting people with low or no qualifications to overcome the barriers which they face to employment and make the most of the capabilities which they have to offer. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Kearney.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks very much. So reflecting on the motion, I revisited our 2017 community plan, and indeed one of the sections was education and skills. We noted at that time that underachievement is particularly apparent in our most deprived areas, as you have stated. And at that time, we reported that we were 5 percentage points above the Northern Ireland average for individuals with no qualifications, and that indeed three of our electoral wards were ranked highly in the worst 100 in the Northern Ireland for education deprivation. But in the meantime, through this council, we have sought to address that in many ways, and one of the chief aims at that time was to give our children and young people the best chance in life. We drew up a list of 15 objectives and to begin to address the above issues, including numeracy and literacy, a peer mentoring programme, foundation degrees, part-time education and preschool places, shared education, STEM programmes, a skill forum and programmes for apprentices, to name a few. So there will be an opportunity in the future to assess the progress of these important objectives. Those objectives were clearly established with lifelong learning in mind. So it's right to seek out any source such as listed in this motion, in this case, the Lifelong Learning Alliance, to inform and raise a public awareness. But in the meantime, I think this council should encourage and indeed celebrate lifelong learning in many ways by way of the Open University, MEGA, Mid-Ulster Skills Forum, and indeed most recently, and in last week, we had the consultation on the Labour Market Partnership. We have lots to encourage, lots to celebrate, so we're very happy to support this motion.
Okay, Councillor Colvin.
Thank you, Chair. And our party is very happy to support this motion. I'm speaking on it because I'm a person who has availed of lifelong learning. I left school early. I couldn't apply myself to my work. I wanted to get out. I did, and then I realised that probably wasn't a very good decision. So from then on in, there was opportunity to continue to study and get qualifications and improve your position and compete successfully for jobs. So absolutely fully support your motion. I think it's very, very good indeed. The only thing I would say, and in the discussions that go on, we shouldn't rule out apprenticeships, how important they are. I think that is included. The electrician has a poor sitting outside his car, outside his house, because he's worked hard, he's run the business, he's providing something that people want. And I think what happens in the education system, they tend to move people towards the university because it looks good in their statistics. That's not actually good for the pupil or the person. And I think actually good careers advice and support is very, very important. It should be open to everybody. My family actually, if I look back and to my uncle, a very, very clever man, he could have been a doctor, but he was in a family who didn't have any money. And because he didn't have any money, he was a farm labourer. So he never achieved his full potential. We never transcended, so to speak. So I'm all for fairness. I think your motion embraces that, so we'll be supporting it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And no other speakers then, so everybody's unanimous. So thank you all very much for your support, and the comments there were all very good as well. And that is what it's about, giving people the opportunity to go on to learning, whatever that may be. And I know from myself and Cahill talking to the Open University, it does include apprenticeships, but there's some people that left school for whatever reason, so maybe they didn't have the qualifications then, or for whatever other reason. So it is a great opportunity for if people want to continue learning that they can do so without any barrier. So thank you all. Moving into confidential business then. If I can get a proposer and a seconder. Councillor Kerr and a seconder. Councillor Sharon McAleer, thank you very much. So that includes...